From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on August 20th in Roseland, Virginia, for the 5th annual Virginia Craft Brewers Fest. It's grown to look a bit like craft beer Woodstock. Tents sprawling across adjoining fields with thousands of people coming for the event, punctuated by live music. The event's always been held at Devil's Backbone's Base Camp Brew Pub. But a controversy erupted this past spring when Devil's Backbone Brewery announced it was being acquired by Anheuser-Busch, the corporate parent of Budweiser Beer. The Washington Post reports that the backlash was quick and severe, with longtime Devil's Backbone fans declaring that the craft brewery had sold out, that they would never drink a drop of Devil's Backbone again. And then in May, festival organizers decided that this August Craft Beer Fest would be the last one hosted by Devil's Backbone. And by the way, Devil's Backbone is no longer allowed to participate. All of which asks a simple question. If a craft brewery is purchased by a big corporate parent, is that automatically selling out? Will the beer no longer be as good? Can the brewery maintain its quality and small production focus? Margins can be tight for small businesses. It's easy for us to stand on the outside and cast aspersions. At the same time, it's fair to ask what happens to the beer when a craft brewery is swallowed up. And that's our discussion this hour. It's the summer of food, winding down our series of conversations about trends in the food and drink industry. And let me welcome our guest, Joe McBain, the owner of Tap and Mallet, is back. Joe, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Jeff Dale is the Minister of Mayhem and co-founder of Three Heads Brewing. You didn't think I would say it on the air, but I did.
Hey, thank you for doing that. And the acronym is MOM, so I am the MOM.
The MOM.
Of the brewery.
You're the MOM of the brewery. Welcome here, MOM. Andy Cook is here, the manager of the Swiftwater Brewing Company. Andy, welcome to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Chris Minnelli is just the owner and founder of Rock Brewing. Welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And Will Cleveland is beer columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Will, welcome to you.
Really excited to be here. Thanks again.
All right. So first of all, let me just kind of go around the table. And I know you guys had a chance to check out the story on Devil's Backbone, you know, selling out, all the allegations. Joe McBain, you just sell beer. You don't have to make it. But what did you think of the story of Devil's Backbone?
I would have thrown them out, too. I think that it's...
You would have thrown them out of the festival.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, in the way that I purchase beer, as breweries are acquired, and there are some, you know, you have to make your own rules, but as breweries acquired, you know, we got into selling independent craft beer, I think it's very bad for the craft beer scene to have these large acquisitions, particularly by Anheuser-Busch, for a variety of reasons that we can talk about further. And yeah, you know, stay true to what it was that, you know, got that festival going in the first place. And you know, the guy that sold that, you know, he's cashed in, and good for him, but the rest of us must go on.
Okay, Andy Cook, what do you think?
You know, I think most of my thoughts pertain to just that particular company, and really just because of the advertising campaign that has really targeted us as small artisanal producers as maybe like a little to a fee, or you know, not quite manly enough in our beer.
You're all hipster posers, man.
All hipster posers, absolutely. So I think like that's most of my gut reaction to it, is just that I'm not a huge fan of the advertising campaign. So I think that, you know, I would agree with Joe.
So you're saying the advertising campaign, the big guys like Anheuser-Busch say, oh, you guys, you small producers, there's something wrong with you. Meanwhile, they're so threatened by you, they're trying to scoop you up and purchase.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, I think that that's really... the next big question for our industry is what will happen to those brands as they get scooped up? Will people stay loyal to them, or will they find the next small producer to really help grow that business?
Sure. Okay. Will Cleveland, people had questions just about what the definition of craft beer, and before the hour you were helping me with this. Help our listeners understand what we mean by craft beer.
Well, according to the Colorado-based Brewers Association, a craft brewery is any brewery that produces under 6 million barrels a year. So that it basically, that's been revised in the last few years, so it includes, you know, bigger craft producers like Yuengling and Sierra Nevada or Sam Adams and brewers like that. And then it also states that less than 25% of your business can be owned by, you know, some either foreign or, you know, capital fund or any, you know, anything like that. So only 25% of the business is allowed to be owned by someone other than the brewer.
Okay. Well, Will, what did you make of the Devil's Backbone story and all of the backlash?
I thought it was really interesting because, you know, you have this brewery that really was one of the founding bedrocks of Virginia craft beer, and, you know, to have it on their campground like that is kind of fascinating. But I mean, I understand the decision to kick them out. I'm for it, like Joe and Andy both are, and it's interesting too because New York, the way the New York Brewers Association is formed, is much different than what the Virginia Craft Beer Guild is, because, you know, if Bud, you know, which has a huge plant in Baldwinsville, or, you know, North American Breweries Genesee wanted to join the New York Brewers Association, they could. It's in their bylaws that, you know, those, they would have just the same amount of voice in the New York State Brewers Association as, you know, Swiftwater or a Rock or Three Heads or any of those smaller breweries.
Okay. Jeff Dale, co-founder of Three Heads Brewing, was it selling out for Devil's Backbone to be acquired by Anheuser-Busch?
Sure. I mean, 100% it is selling out. I mean, the interesting aspect of it is own your decision, own your action. And that's the thing that sort of baffled me about sort of some of the stuff I saw by Devil's Backbone. If you're going to do it, that's fine. And Joe even touched on it. If you're going to do that, you know, bully for them, because they probably made some money in the deal. But you also need to understand that your actions have a reaction.
You don't get to be all things?
Yeah, you can't. If you're going to sell out, and they did. They sold out. God bless them, you know. But at the same time, if you do sell out, understand that you can't then be the craft guys anymore.
But, Jeff, what if whether it's Devil's Backbone or anybody else, because they're hardly the only one who has been acquired by a big corporate parent, and I suspect we're going to see more of this, but what if one of those brewers comes to you and says, look, all that happened is now we've got a big corporate parent. We are the same guys. We are making the same beer. We just have a corporate owner, so that means a little more financial leverage for us.
The whole reason I'm doing this thing is I don't ever want to have a boss again. The moment you get the corporate backbone, you have a boss. And no matter what they say,
you lose autonomy?
You do. And you all of a sudden have to answer
to... What if they ink a deal? What if they come to Three Heads and they say, we're going to give you X millions of dollars, but you are running Three Heads. The only difference is it's got a tiny little mark of Anheuser-Busch on the bottom, and you've got some financial support.
No,
but
way, man.
It's your company.
Nope, because you're opening the door and letting someone in. And I never want to have a boss again. I already have three of them at home. Actually, four, because I have three daughters and a wife. Don't ever want to have any more. I'm done. I'm done having a boss. And that's just a principle thing. And, I mean, we could have gotten investors when we opened up this place, our brewery. And we had people that were trying to come in and were willing to offer to pay money and take over ownership. And we sucked it up to not have that. Our whole goal is to have autonomy, not to ever lose control. Because the moment you lose control, you've lost the vision.
All right, well, don't worry. Chris Spinelli from Rock Brewing is going to come in and disagree and shake things up here. So come on, Chris, get on the microphone and tell me what you know. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
What did you think of Devil's Backbone there?
It's interesting, and especially when you read the article and you go into it. Julia from the Brewers Association has a great point. You open yourself up to it, and the backlash, you go into it full knowing what's going to happen. You know, very few of these breweries that have done this have gotten off clean in their cut. I think, you know, one of the best examples probably is Goose Island. They probably got off the easiest in backlash in terms of their company selling out to InBev. That was one of the first to go. It's hard. It's hard to say that they're wrong for doing so. Some of these guys have worked many years. They have a number of people they answer to. They have their families, their investors. But you know, again, they've got to go with the fact that, yeah, if you do that, that's what you get. And it's not a fair game anymore. You're not at the same playing level because you get access to markets that we don't. You get access to marketing that we don't. You get access to all the ingredients and supply chain that we can't get. And so you're not craft anymore. You can accept that. I think the money they're getting, too, you know, I think they can accept that. They can be happy at night saying, hey, I'm multimillionaire, but you know, that's their choice. It's do you want to stay independent or do you want to get that sellout? And If you can sleep at night with the money that you got, then fine. If you can't, then you stick it out. You stick it out through all the hard times because it's not easy. It's not easy to get into this industry. And truth is, yeah, they'll lose people in Virginia. They should accept what they got at the fact that they're moving it off their site. They're not allowed to be in the cup anymore. But, you know, at the end of the day, they got new markets now to try out and see what happens for them.
So, in other words, own who you are and know that, you know, again, can't be all things. I just read a profile of Pete Wells in the New Yorker. This week's issue of the New Yorker, you should read the issue, this article on Pete Wells. It's incredible. He is the restaurant critic for the New York Times, and it tells the story of a restaurant he reviews. And years ago, when Pete Wells was somewhere else, he got to know the guy who ended up running this restaurant. Small, artisanal, loved what he was doing. Well, this guy builds this business up. He's got multiple restaurants in multiple cities. And Pete Wells goes to review him now, and he savaged him, gave him one star. He basically said, this is everything that's wrong with restaurant industries where people are trying to do things in different cities and be in two places at once, and the quality suffers. And the guy calls him, and he says, you're killing me. You know, we've known each other for years. And his recollection is Pete Wells basically told him, this is the choice that you made, and you're making a lot of money, but not my job is to review it honestly. And so that seems to be sort of the sentiment that we're hearing when it comes to beer. You can't be all things. But does none of you guys believe that you can maintain the autonomy, that you can still be craft, you know, that's impossible?
Well, I think look at food. You know, we going back decades, it was just small farmers. And as it becomes more commercialized, which is what's happening in craft beer, I mean, it's been in big beer for a long, long time, it's going the same way. And this is not, don't think that there's any particular interest in Devil's Backbone or Goose Island or, you know, any one of the breweries themselves or a huge love for any one of their beers, but it makes sense for the AB InBev brands. And they acquire them, and it's not really about the brewer either. You know, people make choices. They want to retire. They, you know, they cash out. Like, that's their thing. But as a consumer, I just think we should understand what it means. And most of the big popular beers from these brands, they're not going to be brewed at the Devil's Backbone facility. They're going to get moved to massive factories for large national, international distribution. And it does have an effect, you know, and it's a shareholder company. So you've maximized efficiencies as far as production, but then what do you do next? You know, maybe you tweak the recipes a little bit, right? And so on and so on. And this isn't something new. You look in Europe and particularly the UK back in, you know, the 70s and 80s, you know, this already happened. And the beers absolutely suffered, you know, and you have to decide where do you want to spend your money as a consumer. And I think maybe getting angry with the particular brewer who sold out is maybe misdirected. And, you know, look at, where do you spend your dollars, you know?
Sure, yeah. You want to jump in? Just go ahead. Yeah,
yeah. Something to bring in here, too, going on what Joe's saying, is that they're consolidating. And the bigger issue, too, which a lot of people aren't paying attention to, this isn't important, the fact that they're selling out. What's really important to look at is the merger of InBev and SAB Miller. So you take in the two biggest beer companies in the world and combining them, and the Department of Justice is looking into them and saying, well, didn't you guys just do something semi-illegal in purchasing up a bunch of distributors in Colorado and forcing out competition? So the bigger thing to look at, and Joe's right, you've got to focus on the fact of where you're buying your beer from, because you might think you're buying an independent brewery, but in reality, the way it's going back to is they're trying to take back over stores. And by adding in all these smaller breweries, they can have a portfolio that dominates 85-90% of a store shelf, and then all the little guys get forced out and they can't make the money to stay open. That's when it starts to become an issue. You know, selling out, yeah, it's not so bad, but we should call these people out, because at the end of the day, InBev's doing everything they can to gain back the market share that they've lost, even if it means eating up distributors and taking out competition.
All right, listeners, I want to hear from you. What do you drink? When it comes to beer, craft beer, et cetera, do these issues matter to you? What do you think about the size of the company and supporting as local, I guess, as it can be. I mean, we could talk about, what is it, New Glarus out of Wisconsin, their business decision. They don't sell outside the borders of the state. I mean, so you see some of that out there. But tell us about your beer habits and what you think about the craft beer industry here. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I also think, and this is probably a separate discussion, this is not hardly the only industry where big takeovers happen. Tom's of Maine used to be this nice little toothpaste company, and now I think it's owned by Crest or something. Megan Mack, can you help me figure out if I'm just speaking out of school there? But I'm pretty sure even my beloved local small toothpaste, I think, is a big guy now. So it happens. But let me read an email from a listener named Scott who happened to be on vacation this year and wanted to share a story. Scott writes, "My husband and I just returned from a 5-day vacation, which for us means brewery tours. In this case, we were down in the Shenandoah Valley in the Blue Ridge Mountains, visited 13 breweries. We stopped at Devil's Backbone in Virginia, a beer I had tried and loved a few years back. They have a beautiful large space. Todd and I were impressed until the flight of beers actually arrived. The beer was basically boring, no character. Todd said it was like the beer had no love or passion. In a conversation with the bartender, we learned that they are now a subsidiary of Anheuser-Busch, and the poor taste became clear. We had a similar experience with Ballast Point beer while visiting San Diego, which is now owned by Rochester's own Constellation Brands, which explains the sudden presence of their product everywhere." So Scott just saying he thinks there's a discernible difference. Let me ask around the table. You think is it confirmation bias that we think we're going to like the beer less? I mean, I think it was Joe McBain who said on a past show, at least Anheuser-Busch or at least Budweiser is consistent with the products they make. Do we think we're going to like the beer less, or is the beer not as good?
So I think I would say that it's probably a little bit of confirmation bias, and I'm probably guilty of it as well. But I do think that as a small company, it's so much easier to take risks. Our investment in a batch of beer is, you know, a couple thousand dollars. At Budweiser, it might be tens of thousands of dollars. So it's easier for us to take risks, because if we dump it, it's, you know, and we've done this. We've done really stupid things that people probably shouldn't do with beer. One is we tried to make one with pumpkin seeds, and it just didn't work. So, you know, we can just dump it down the drain.
I hope it was a small batch. Yeah,
it was a whole lot smaller than a batch of Budweiser. That's for sure.
Yes.
Probably roughly 1/30th of a batch of Budweiser.
Okay.
Maybe more. I'm not sure exactly what size system they're using, but I think that's one thing you'll see is that as these companies make their names on certain styles of beer, certain brands of beer, and get bigger and bigger and then get acquired, it's a lot harder to be nimble and take those risks. So I think our beer industry is always looking for that next new taste experience. And so I feel like that's where we as small brewers can really gain market share.
Okay. Thanks, by the way, to producer Megan Mack for informing me Tom's of Maine is now a division of Colgate Palmolive. So my brain was going in the right direction. And we've got a lot of phone calls queued up. So why don't we start working through the phone calls. Penelope in Rochester first up. I know you're on a speakerphone, but that's okay. Go ahead, Penelope.
Hi, Evan. Hi, guys. I just wanted to make a comment about how very fortunate we are in the Rochester area with the quality of beer from our local craft brewers and the quality of facilities that they're providing us to visit. And to remind people that when we support these wonderful businesses, not only are we supporting their beer, but we're supporting their families directly and their employees' families directly. And that the longer they stay local, the better off our whole local scene is for that. They're adding a lot, and it's just a thrilling time for beer in Rochester. So thank you so much to all of you.
Thank you, Penelope. Thanks for the phone call. Just a lot of thumbs up around the room. Anything to add there? No, I think it's just a lot of, you know, I think a lot of appreciation for that sentiment. But before I get back to the phones, on the flip side of that, Penelope's saying these are small local businesses, they're great for our economy, etc. One of the arguments that I saw, and because I can't remember offhand who was making it, I don't want to cite an incorrect source, someone saying at least if a company like Anheuser-Busch comes in and they grab three heads, which Jeff says is never happening, right, Jeff?
Well, I won't be with the company if they're going to come in and offer me like $30 million just to me. I might have to rethink it.
Right, and that's how it goes. That is the reality, right? I mean, I think that's why you shouldn't concern yourself too much with the individual, you know, brewers themselves. Because you know what? Like, we all have to make decisions, right? You know, here's so much money. Jeff, you don't want to have another boss again. You got 30 million. You don't have to, dude. You are all good.
Well, I mean, and just to turn it back on you, if someone came up to you and offered to pay you $100 million to take Tap and Mallet and to make it a chain.
I like how the numbers are going up.
But, you know, I mean, like, what it comes down to is I think everyone has a number as much as they want to try and say they don't. It is unfortunate, but there is.
Everything in the world is for sale. Yes. I heard somebody say that. I think that's roughly true. But on that note, Jeff, let me just ask them, because the argument I heard being made was this. Well, is it possible that the big corporate parents, you may not like the beer, you may not like the production scale, but are they better for workers' rights? Are they better for insurance? Are they better for conditions? I don't know the answer to that, but Jeff?
I don't think so. I mean, I've worked in a lot of different jobs, and I think the problem is once you get into a corporate environment, maybe you can get some better benefits, sure, but I think the overall health of the employee will not be the same. I have a hard time thinking that people are enjoying their job as much as the people that work at Three Heads do. I mean, there's a flexibility when you have sort of a family environment. And the smaller you are, it does. It gives you a family environment. You have a little more flexibility. You're a little bit more understanding as opposed to, you know, black and white. And the more corporate you get, the more black and white it becomes. And there's a lot less just understanding and just overall, your mental health just suffers. I mean, worst jobs I ever had were working in Cube Village, you know, and I prefer working in the brewery and having this kind of setup.
Okay.
So I would just say I think that from friends that I know that have worked for a large brewery that runs, a restaurant or a bar, I feel very confident that our workers are paid as well, or if not better. I think that if that brewery grows to such a level that that say like a Goose Island does, I think the head of the brewery probably gets paid better than I pay myself. I think the other thing to think about is that we all work our tails off, speaking for everybody around this table. And the reason that we do is because we really believe in what we're doing. We really enjoy it. We really appreciate the people that we work with, and we appreciate the super intimate relationship with the customer. And, you know, I think that really comes through in the product and the experience. And I think kind of like what Joe was saying is that it's maybe less about the brewers than it is about the consumer. And so maybe every brewer has a prize. So that's their choice. For us as consumers, and I count myself in there too, it's up to us to have to vote with our wallets and put our money where behind businesses that we want to support.
Sure. And another email says, in talking with brewery owners, I've had a number say to me something along the orders of, if some big conglomerate came and offered me millions for my brand, I am likely to sell, take the money, then start a new business that I would keep small and enjoy. You know, so, Will?
Think the other thing that's important to consider is that the relationship between big beer and small beer, you know, craft beer, doesn't have to be antagonistic. You know, I mean, you look at really the bullying that Anheuser-Busch InBev is doing, and, you know, they're trying to really infiltrate this business from within. You know, they're trying to move into it and use those whatever craft labels they're buying to, you know, eat up whatever tap space might go to Andy or Chris or Jeff. And, you know, you look at what Genesee, you know, North American Breweries is doing in Rochester, and they're, you know, the sixth largest brewery in America. They're owned by a huge conglomerate down in Costa Rica. And they don't have this antagonistic role with local beer. You know, they've done a lot to really embrace what Rochester beer is about. You know, they offer monthly sensory panels to help brewers with off flavors. You know, they had a Tap It Forward festival last week to kind of highlight local beer. And I think they're understanding that, you know, if Rochester is to become a craft beer destination, that they want to make sure that all of the beer in Rochester is good. And I think that flies directly in the face of what, you know, what Anheuser-Busch InBev is doing.
All right, let me get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and David in Rochester will grab your phone call. Emily, we'll read your email question for the group there. You're just hearing from Will Cleveland, who's a beer columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Best job in town. Chris Spinelli is owner and founder of Rock Brewing. Andy Cook's manager of the Swiftwater Brewing Company. Jeff Dale is the minister of mayhem for Three Heads Brewing. And Joe McBain is the owner of Tap and Mallet. And we continue with the discussion on sized craft beer, big beer, selling out, and more next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, new research at the University of Rochester's Lab for Laser Energetics is paving the way to develop fusion as an energy source. How? We will talk about the advancements. And in our second hour, the chief of cardiology at Highland Hospital, Dr. Chad Teeters, joins us. He decided this past spring to go vegan. He's lost 57 pounds and he wants to share his story. Talk with you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're enjoying the conversation that you're hearing on this broadcast today as we talk beer, craft beer in the scene, it's part of our Summer of Food series of conversations about food, agriculture, trends, and food and drink. And we're wrapping up because summer's wrapping up. We got one more conversation on Thursday, and then you can find the entire series of Summer of Food on WXXINews.org/connections. Very easy to sort that out. And I've heard some say it's been sort of like summer beach reading or running music, the Summer of Food series of podcasts. So let me get back to the phones. This is David in Rochester. Go ahead, David.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good show. And I just got to tell you, to me, going to a like McBain's joint, I'll call it that, Tap and Mallet, it's the difference between going to a McDonald's and going to the corner pub. You know, you can't get personality. You're not going to get personality. You're not going to feel welcome like Joe does with all of his customers. It's not, they're not original. Joe's and other places are original. The staff is friendly. I'm not working for you, Joe. I'm telling you the truth.
Well, I should have appreciated it.
I like your beer. In fact, how personable is it when the guy sits down with a bunch of us annually to try different beers and enlighten his customers? It's a wonderful experience. I mean, that's what we want. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. I don't want to go and pick up a six-pack and know that it's pushing people off the shelf. It's ridiculous. I get the fact of making money, but then go open another one because that's really what I want. I want the atmosphere. Of course, I like good IPA, and among other things, Joe's trying to teach us how to like sour beers, and that's a big challenge, but he's trying, and that's what it's about for me. That's what it's about for a lot of people. I'm just got to be an older beer drinker, so I'm an older trick to teach.
Well,
but it's really important that you have character. Without character, why would I go there?
Yeah,
place is full of character.
David, thank you. Thank you for the phone call. Let me just say, maybe for David, we'll do a sour beer intervention. And we'll see, you know, we did a Baroque music intervention. We might do an opera intervention. We're going to do a sour beer intervention led by Joe and the crew. And David, we'll see if they can turn you around on that. But on a very serious note, I this is a good way to pivot to, I think, an important part of this discussion. You know, David's making his point about he doesn't want to drink mass-produced beer that pushes smaller local companies off the shelf. Kevin writes to the program and says, InBev, a foreign entity, is busy buying the world's breweries unchecked. When InBev buys, I stop drinking. I will switch to another independent brewer. InBev should be stopped. That's from Kevin. But Joe McBain, in our brief break, you know, you were talking about the fact that right now this is, you know, we haven't reached a point with Devil's Backbone and pick any of the others that, well, that's it. The big guys have had their share of it. We're probably going to see more craft breweries bought. I don't know if it's come up at all in this room. We'll talk about it. Certainly hasn't with Jeff Dale yet. No one's offered him $30 million. But very seriously, Joe, people should probably educate themselves as consumers and understand this trend's likely to continue. And what does it mean? First of all, let me start with you. We'll go around the room. What does this mean for the consumer? Are we eventually going to lose craft beer? Are they going to buy up the majority of it? Or what do you think is going to happen?
So the way I see it going, this trend, while a little discouraging, is it's inevitable. We've seen it in many other industries. And Anheuser-Busch, InBev, controls a huge portion of the total beer market. Okay, and craft beer got to a point where it was annoyingly big and needed to be kind of reined in. And they found the best strategy, you know, was not to create their own things because they're not authentic, but to acquire and build a portfolio, and, you know, they control distribution in a certain way. So imagine you're a distributor, Evan, right? And most of your bills are paid through Budweiser, which they would be, and they say, hey, you know what, that independent stuff, you don't need to sell that. We have it for you now. And this will continue, and it will become difficult for regional brewers to compete in that forum. And the future is guys like Chris and Andy and Jeff, who are their small producers. They're not looking to go miles and miles into many states, and they will fly underneath that radar. And as drinkers, we can choose to spend our money and support that creative, independent craft scene, which really is what gets our nerves going when this stuff starts happening, you know?
But as a consumer, when I come into, well, in the tap, I'm going to trust you.
You can trust me.
I mean that very sincerely. Yep. But let's say I'm in a store and I'm buying off the shelf. I just made, I made the reference to Tom's of Maine toothpaste, but we had to look up which big company bought it. You could pick any industry. Sometimes it's hard to know, is this a, for lack of a better term, sort of artisanal product, or is this part of a big corporate parent? How do you become a better consumer?
Okay, so let's assume that you don't work with beer all day like we do. I think you just genuinely need to take a little bit of interest, and a very quick Google search will tell you what's what, and it's very easily accessible. There are many compiled lists out there, but it does sort of require the effort to take that extra step. But you're spending a bunch of money on a case of beer or whatever. I think it's worth a quick 60-second investment of your time.
All right, let me ask Will Cleveland on the opposite side of the table, a beer columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Where do you see the market going, and how to stay educated as a consumer?
Well, I think, like we're seeing a lot in Rochester, you're seeing this move towards really hyper-local. You're seeing breweries that are really concerned with not dominating an entire state, but, being a vital component of a neighborhood. You see Swiftwater wanting to be, wanting to be a good neighbor in the South Wedge. You see Chris, over in the East End, and they're, they've kind of were one of the first breweries to start up in Rochester, second wave of breweries, around 2010. And then you see, what Jeff and Dan and everyone did with Three Heads, and moving, this huge $4 million facility, into a neighborhood that's really, in neighborhood of the arts, over off university there, that's really percolating with a lot of excitement and activity right now. And I think that's what you're going to see a lot more of. You're going to see, I think every brewery that I've written about this year has been, brewing on a 2.5-barrel system and worried about, having 6 different styles on, and things of that nature. So I don't think you're going to see, I think that's where you're going to continue to see the most growth in beer. I think from what we've seen from numbers released from the Brewers Association is, the largest segment of beer, or the only segment of beer really that's still growing, is craft beer. And it's not, you see the macro lagers and all of those things losing a lot of their market share. So I think you're going to continue to see, a push towards really, being able to walk into the brewery and say, hi, I'm Will, did you make this beer? Can you tell me about it? And, there's a connection and ownership that you can do when you can do that. And I think you're going to continue to see more of that, especially in Rochester, because I don't think we've even come close to what saturation could be in this market.
All right, from Three Heads Brewing, Jeff Dale, what do you think?
Well, I think also what you're starting to see just across all segments of, food and beverage is the next wave of consumers, the 20-somethings, they're more willing to pay a little bit extra for something that's local. And I think they realize bigger corporations, they don't put the craft, the time, or maybe all the best ingredients in. And I think what you'll start to see more and more is, and beer is a great example of it, but you're seeing it with the restaurants. A lot of the chain restaurants aren't doing, I don't think, as well in Rochester as a lot of the one-offs like Tap and Mallet or, Blue Wolf or these different places that are, it's a lot easier to, attack. And that segment's growing, and they're going to have more money. And I think that's the trend. And so I do agree. I think you're going to see a lot more hyper-local. It's been happening for the last 5 to 10 years, and it's not losing steam. It's getting stronger. And You know, so I think you're just going to keep seeing. You'll still have the big guys. You'll still have, you know, the big guys getting bought up. But it's going back to almost like it was in the 1880s, where you're going to have a lot of the neighborhood beer. You know, and that's what you're going to get into, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, it would be whack-a-mole for big beer to think that they could somehow buy up and kind of stamp out craft beer as a movement. I mean, it will reappear and reemerge. So that's a good thing. But, Jeff, when it comes to your size, let me ask all three of you, sort of about production size. How big are you now? How big are you, you know, 3 years ago? And where do you think you're going?
Well, I mean, we were contract brewing through Custom Brew Crafters 3 years ago. We were maybe 1,500, 2,000 tops.
And 1,500, 2,000
barrels.
Which equals how much?
It's about 3,000 kegs.
Okay.
And our production this year, I mean, it's rocket ship, because we now have a bottling line. We have better pricing because we now are doing everything in-house. So we're able to change our packaging from 4 packs to 6 packs. So I don't even want to even fathom what we're going to be doing this year. But, I mean, ultimately, the goal would be to get up to being about a 10,000-barrel, you know, a year brewery. I mean, at that point, you know, I think we have the distribution network in place that can support it. I mean, when you're talking about New Glarus, you know, being in Wisconsin only, I mean, we have a dream of sometime being, you know, a New York-only brewery. But really, at this point, 90% of the beer we're making is staying in Rochester. You know, we do have some Buffalo, some Syracuse. Ithaca is probably our second biggest area that we sell beer. But, I mean, that's the goal.
And could you ever envision a big company coming to you and making an offer?
Sure. I mean, I could see that happening. I mean, I joke around when I say the number, but the reality is this is such a huge part of who we are. We love this city, and this gives us a chance to have some, you know, power and sway in the city. I really would have to be a crazy number at this point in my life. You know, granted, I can't speak for Todd and Dan, my other partners, but I think that they feel exactly the same. I mean, this is... Dan always talks about wanting this to be our legacy. You know, this is something that I want to be able to pass on to our kids. You know, so you better come correct if you're going to come. But I have a hard time thinking that we're still too far in debt.
Gina in Rochester, I'm coming to you on the phone in a second, but let me continue on that thread, because Emily did email asking if there have been any offers that we know from the big guys to acquire local guys. I don't know of any.
Yeah, and, I would say, Andy from Swiftwater, we produced 500 barrels last year, and next year we'll produce 700 or 800. So that's we were a quarter of the size before Three Heads expanded. So I think we're probably way too small for anybody to take any interest other than maybe a local investor, which we have. You know, people ask us all the time, like, "Oh, can I invest $10,000 or something like that?" I love having the control. I own it with my father, and I think that lets us just be super nimble. And I think on the point of expansion, like, there's the maybe one of the biggest questions for everyone our size is, how fast do we want to grow? So maybe just small incremental growth keeps our employees happier, and then also keeps our customers happier as well. Right now, at the size that we are, I can afford to spend a Friday night washing dishes, and I think the customers get a really big kick out of the owner or the manager chatting with them while he's washing dishes at the bar saying.
Chris Spinelli.
Yeah, for us, you know, 3 years ago, we were looking at, you know, just about 200 barrels of production. Maybe a little bit more. And this year we're going to probably come close to about 1,000. And with maybe hopes of next year trying to get up to about 2,000. So, you know, growth for us has been key. You know, we've got some amazing brewers there that have done a great job. And, you know, I kind of want to get their product as far as we can, as fast as we can, because we love what we do and we want it out there. I don't see us leaving New York State anytime soon. It's a big state and we've got a lot of great customers here. So to be a part of that growth is great. You know, InBev isn't knocking on my door. I don't see it happening anytime soon. Like Andy said, we're small.
Yeah.
And A lot of the bigger acquirees have been, you know, in the game for a long time.
Sure. I know you guys mentioned your size. Jeff, again, tell me, how many barrels this year?
Well, I mean, I don't know exactly, but we have the ability at this point to do about 10 to 12,000 a year.
How big is Devil's Backbone?
Devil's Backbone is roughly probably four times the size of what Jeff and Three Heads is capable of doing.
So maybe 40,000 barrels.
Yeah, I think they were. I think they were in the range of 50,000 somewhere in that range.
That's a big craft brewery.
Yes.
Okay. And the law or the rules, the guidelines. Will Cleveland, how big?
600,000.
Oh, six million.
6 million
barrels.
Yes. So a barrel's roughly 31 gallons.
That's not very craft, man.
All I'm going to say, and this is my own little caveat that I have to put in there, if you can advertise during the Super Bowl, you're not a craft brewery.
Sure. I mean, that's fine, right?
All right. Well said. All right. So let me get back to your calls. Gina, then Robert. Gina in Rochester. Go ahead, Gina.
Hey, guys. I just want to add in there. I think it's been touched on a little bit about the community that craft beer creates, and especially here in Rochester. I've worked for Joe for 6 years at Tap and Mallet. My husband and I own Nathaniel's Beer Corner Store. And I think what gets lost in translation selling to the bigger companies is the relationships you build and the intimacy, because out of those relationships comes a synergy, too. Here in Rochester, the craft beer community is incredible, so supportive of each other. You don't get people backbiting. It's all very much supportive, and I think that's also the worry that I see these craft breweries selling to bigger places is the loss of support for, you know, supporting your community, supporting each other. And, guys, you're great, so keep up the great work.
Thanks, Gina. Gina. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate that. Again, just another call that probably got a lot of thumbs up from the panel. But now let's try something a little different here. Robert in Fairport wants to talk about a bubble, Robert?
Yeah, if you look at craft beer, the market's been growing really pretty fast here for the past several years. You go down to, you look at around 2013, you're looking at about 20% growth and maybe 15% for 2014. Wall Street Journal did an article in August, and they're projecting the percentage growth, and this is outside of restaurants, of around 5% annual for craft beer. So there's been a big slowdown in craft beer growth. I know that a lot of your panelists are talking about selling beer in restaurants and pubs and whatnot, so that may be slightly different. But it just feels locally and nationally like we're in a bubble with this. It seems like you open the DNC up, and about every week we've got three or four of these new brew pubs opening up. And I felt I've heard this before with you know, frozen yogurt, cupcakes, and stuff like that, and it just feels like a rerun.
Okay. Some thoughts there. Go ahead, Chris.
So some of my thoughts on this, you know, there is potential for a bubble here. There has been a bubble in the past. There's a definitely different industry today than there was even 5 years ago when we started. I would have said if there was really going to be a risk of bubble, it was about 5 years ago. Even 2 years ago at the Craft Brewers Conference, they made a big talk about, oh my God, you know, careful on growth. Then this year, it was a totally different scene, and the focus being quality. And there's the thing. If people just get in to make money, and people just get in to throw out whatever they want for fun, then yeah, you know, there's risk of a bubble. But there's still a big market out there. We're less than, we just went over 15%, I think, of the whole entire craft beer industry. Every year, and again, going back to what InBev is trying to do, is trying to get that market share, but what they're losing every year is 2% annually on their core beers. They're never going to fix that. So I think there's still room, but again, quality. If you don't put out quality, you're going to hurt the whole industry.
Andy Cook from Swiftwater?
I had a couple thoughts on that. So the first thing I would make, and the caller kind of referenced this, is that roughly about 1%, maybe 1.5% of the beer that we've produced in our first 2 years of operation has been in a package. So it's all in pubs, restaurants, at our place or elsewhere. So I think we're really not captured at all in that statistic. My other thought is that I would compare Rochester to a lot of you know, we're a pretty awesome hip city, you know, so I like to compare us to like a Burlington, or my sister lived in Fort Collins, Colorado, which is smaller than Rochester as far as population. They have 20 breweries. A couple of them are top 50 in the country as far as production. So I think Rochester, now that we're up to 7, and Will, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 13 in Monroe County, I think we have a ways to go. And I think where that bubble might shake out is both at the top end and the bottom end. So the top of the production, I think those companies that have shareholders and just need to grow, I think they might have a tough time when that market levels off. I don't think it'll ever crash. I think it'll just level off. So if you're depending on growth in order to pay your banker, I think that might be tough. And then I also think that at the bottom, if there are a lot of people opening up, like was said, like just to make money, or who don't have the basic background in brewing science, I think if you're not putting out good beer, I don't think you'll get support for too long when a place opens up across the street that is making good beer.
Okay. Jeff Dale, you want to add anything there on the bubble?
Well, no. I mean, I also think that the interesting thing is, I mean, you're talking about 13 different breweries in this town, and if you look at it, there's a lot of just different models. I think the difference is, in the years past, everyone did the same exact thing, where, you know, how we're running our business, it's completely different than how these two are running their business, and vice versa, you know, and you see a lot of these other breweries that are popping up, and it's just a different focus, and you can survive. If you have a smaller system, if you have good traffic and you make quality beer, you'll survive. There's enough different opportunities. There's enough people now that are willing to come out and see beer. I mean, we've been doing this now for a little over 5 years. Our numbers haven't gotten smaller. I mean, we keep growing. I don't see this pop happening as much as if you're making good beer and you have a good business model, you'll survive. It's like no other industry.
Robert, any follow there?
No, I wish everyone here the best of luck. The only thing as a follow-up, I would say is that a lot of the growth seems to be in the restaurant and bar trade, and that industry just seems to me to be one of the most economically sensitive industries, that if you do go into a recession, that's usually the first thing that goes. Mm. So I don't know. In the meantime, I just wish everyone the best of luck.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
And, you know, to Robert's point on, you know, does it feel like we've covered ground? I think part of this show's mission is to make sure that we are continually on top of where the scene is. And there's an evolution happening. I think what Jeff Dale is telling you, 2 years ago when you were on this program, you guys were a very different company. Mm-hmm. Where you were doing things, where you were producing, how much growth there was. You know, a couple of years ago, where was Swiftwater?
I was grinding concrete floors at that time, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You were drinking probably some beers you did that, but yeah, right. So, Rock Brewing, it's a story of growth and evolution, and I take the point. I don't think, just observationally, there's a bubble on this. Maybe there is a growth curve that will slow down a little bit, but I think what I think is not a trend is that people like quality, and people like ingredients to be as local as they can, or at least as well-made as possible, and I think that isn't really necessarily going to change. But let me read one more quick email from Nick, who says, why don't we see more truly local beers made with local ingredients? Brewers consistently declare craft beers made with foreign ingredients local. They're no more local than a dish of food made locally with foreign ingredients. Yet in the food industry, we don't see folks commonly misusing the term local, as is so prevalent in the craft beverage industry. Nick, on the last point, you're wrong about that. There's been a big investigation. We covered it on the show earlier this year in the Tampa Bay Times. People absolutely misappropriate the term local or farm to table, but he's alleging that in the craft beer industry it happens a lot. I don't know the answer to that, but Andy, go ahead.
So I guess what I would say from Swiftwater's perspective is that we're a farm brewery, which not every brewery in New York State is, but we're mandated to use 20% local ingredients. As far as malt goes, we're a lot higher than that, 80 or 90%. And that malt is made from barley, which is malted in Rochester. And then it's actually grown on my parents' family farm. They grew 75 acres of barley this year. So from from the soil that it's planted in to the pint glass at our brewery, it's under 100 miles traveled. That being said, I think it undersells the brewers in Rochester to say that beer made with foreign ingredients isn't local. And I think the blood, sweat, and tears that go into it absolutely qualifies that as local. The one last thing I would say is it's very difficult to brew certain types of beer with local ingredients. Part of that is that the industries that grow barley, that malt barley, and then also that grow hops are very new industries in New York, and it's going to take a decade, maybe two, and a lot of intellectual support from Cornell and from the state before we can compete with places like Oregon or Germany.
All right, the last word, Jeff Dale, 30 seconds, go ahead.
Just tie it on to that. I mean, when you start to get to certain levels, too, they just don't have the infrastructure in place. There's some places that come to us with hop farms, and they're like, we can do this. Well, consistency and quality matters. Their yield will be one of our batches. And how can you have a consistent batch? You need to be able to, you know, have the time, as you said, to grow it. I would love to have everything come right from New York. We don't say we're making local beers. We would love to, and it's the trend. Talk to me in 2 years.
But you're transparent with your customers about where it's coming
from.
Yes,
and talk to me in 2 years, and it'll happen.
Okay, see? And that's another thing that's changing. It is getting more local on that. But I think what we've established this hour is the group here at least feels like if you sell out, own it, enjoy your money, but you're not making craft beer anymore. And these guys are making craft beer, and Will Cleveland gets to write about it. He's the beer columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. That was fun, Will. I like reading your stuff as well. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right, Chris Spinelli from Rock Brewing, very, very much enjoyed it. Chris, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff Dale from Three Heads Brewing. Thank you, Jeff.
Much love.
And Andy Cook from Swiftwater Brewing Company. Andy, thank you.
Thanks, Evan, and thanks to the callers for the great conversation.
You got it. Joe McBain, Tap and Mallet. See you there, sir. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Evan. Thank you.
And Rob Braden, Megan Mack, and the whole crew at Connections. I'm Evan. Talk to you Wednesday.